you know, before we get to football, and obviously a tough game yesterday for the 49ers, but the events in Las Vegas taking precedence over the headlines, and important for us to send our thoughts to those who have been affected, and you know, the thousands that have been affected by the shooting, the mass shooting at the country concert from Mandalay Bay.
Yeah. Sadly, we're getting too many reminders of how difficult it is on, let's say, a Monday morning, if you're a football fan, like a 49er fan yesterday, to wake up and smile, and then it gets put into its very, very proper perspective when we wake up this morning and see and listen to that horrible story.
It's tough. I mean, I know thoughts and prayers only go so far, but I could say I feel pretty sick sitting here today. It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. Hopefully that, you know, finally we'll learn. Who knows if this will be the last straw with government, and maybe something, some, you know, something can happen from this, but right now it's just sad. It's devastating, and our thoughts go out to them. Let's talk about yesterday, Ted. 49ers now 0-4, 18-15, a crushing loss in overtime. They had their chances, plenty of them. Ultimately, Larry Fitzgerald does it to the 49ers again.
Yeah, Joe, I'll come back to something I said on the radio broadcast yesterday, and I am not a big fan of the axiom that's a game that I should have won or we should have won. I think that immediately connotes a disrespect for your opponent, whether it's an individual sport or a team sport. Yesterday was a game the 49ers should have won, period. And that's what makes it so painful. And there were many plays. Look, it's never just one play. Rarely ever just one play. There were many plays throughout the game that the 49ers had opportunities to make that they didn't. But there was the one defining moment. There was a walk-off play, which rarely happens in football. It's a baseball term, right? But there was a walk-off play that, unfortunately, Brian Hoyer didn't make. And it was a touchdown that was there screaming to be had to walk off the field with a win, and it didn't happen. And that's the thing that probably makes it harder than anything else to linger, you know, or leaves the taste of that loss lingering further than anything.
The third straight loss now by 3 points or less, all against NFC West opponents. Here's how it went down yesterday from University of Phoenix Stadium. A demonstration during the national anthem, the 49ers sent out a statement of unity. It was posted on social media and online. And here's just a display, some 49ers on a knee, everyone else behind them standing hand over their heart with a hand on their teammate's shoulder. Here's in the very opening drive. The pressure forces Carson Palmer into a bad choice. It goes through Rashard Robinson's hands but into Ray Armstrong's hands for the early takeaway to keep the game scoreless. That's Armstrong's second career interception. And then it was the Robbie Gould Show. All day, throughout the afternoon, he was absolutely money. This was his first of 5 field goals, and let me tell you, they were all right down the middle. Now it's tied 6-6 as Robbie Gould and Phil Dawson went back and forth throughout this one. Here's a touchdown pass to Matt Breida that would be called back due to penalty, and that leads to another Robbie Gould field goal. Another unfortunate penalty there. We'll get more on that in a second. Here's Robbie Gould again. This is number 3, again, right down the middle. That was from 47. He was also good from 49 in this one. Here's the play you're talking about, Ted. In overtime, a chance to win it. And Brian Hoyer sails out of the end zone, lives to fight another day, and Robbie Gould would come on for his 5th field goal attempt. Up and in. Less than 3 minutes to go. The defense has to hold on, and Carson Palmer would march his team down the field. This is on 2nd down from the 19-yard line with 35 seconds to go. It's Larry Legend, the walk-off touchdown. And that is all she wrote, Ted.
Yeah, it was that, you know, a couple plays, obviously. There was the offensive pass interference that brought a touchdown back. It was a good call. It was an unfortunate penalty by Trent Taylor. And then that last play that I was referencing, you could see on the goal line that Tyrann Mathieu was close to Trent Taylor. But if Trent Taylor was the first target and the timing was there, and obviously you saw once Hoyer didn't look that way, Tyrann Mathieu pegged off in the The unfortunate part is, by the time Hoyer throws the ball, there's no defender within 5 yards of Trent Taylor. And again, that's a play where if you make it, you walk off the field. I mean, that's a win.
And that's interesting, too, is, I mean, I understand the thought process of not wanting to make the big mistake. But from the looks of it, I mean, there's no immediate, I guess the pressure was coming a little bit. But even if you take a sack there, you're either running an extra 40 seconds off the clock or forcing Arizona to use a timeout. You're obviously well within field goal range, and so as long as you don't turn it over, a sack's not the worst thing in the world. Ultimately, the defense, you know, they had a chance. Both groups had their chances to secure a win for the 49ers.
And I think that's the other part of this play. And as Will said, that a sack in that situation would, I mean, obviously you don't want the turnover, and that's well thought by any quarterback. The last thing you want to do is give up the points right there. A sack's not the worst thing in the world. You're still in easy field goal range, plus it would have moved the clock and either reduced Arizona's remaining time or forced them to use a timeout. Might it have made a difference on the last drive? You know, we'll never know. The frustration, I think, throughout the game for the 49ers, and we saw it time and time again, the pass game is just not working. Now, yesterday was made difficult because you have a high-level cornerback in Patrick Peterson, and he neutralized Pierre Garçon. Pierre Garçon is clearly the best receiver the 49ers have. He was a great weapon against the Rams. He couldn't be that kind of weapon yesterday because of Patrick Peterson's coverage. And then, as this last play that we just showed, Tyrann Mathieu pretty much smothered Trent Taylor much of the day. And that's where you see the challenge, clearly, that Taylor's going to face in the NFL because of his size. Tyrann Mathieu's huge. And he was physically smothering Trent Taylor on a lot of passes. And the 49ers are trying to force balls to Taylor against really tight coverage. Well, that really made the pass game difficult for the 49ers because you have two guys now that are being taken down by coverage. So who was the most targeted receiver yesterday for the 49ers? Aldrick Robinson. Marquise Goodwin goes down first quarter. We never see him again. And the optics of this were terrible. 12 targets to Aldrick Robinson, 3 catches. I mean, that's really unfortunate given that he's not going against prime coverage. He's basically going against a corner in Justin Belfield that you want to beat. And sadly, we saw a tremendous, I can only call it, lack of communication in the pass game. How many egregious missed throws were there from Hoyer to Aldrick Robinson, including the one that we saw Kyle Shanahan eventually catching in frustration spike to the turf. So that's where I'm saying, to me, the takeaway yesterday, the pass game just isn't there right now. You know, everyone's going to have their own opinions as to answers. Kyle Shanahan obviously has got to be addressing this starting on the flight last night. But that was really a distressing thing for the 49ers yesterday to go now 9 quarters on the road without a touchdown. And against, you know, yesterday in a situation where you really think you had some opportunities, some terrific opportunities to score.
You did, and I think the shame of it all is you look at the fourth quarter. The 49ers didn't have a single first down. They had 2 possessions with less than 4 minutes remaining and a chance to win in a tie ball game, couldn't move the football. And then you get the ball first in overtime. You win the coin toss, they elect to receive. Mm-hmm. And really, this what could have been the signature drive early on here in this season, you look at some of the first down plays. On 3rd and 3, Brian Hoyer to Taylor for 8 yards. On 3rd and 4, Kyle Juszczyk, a very beastly 8-yard run up the middle. 3rd and 2, Brian Hoyer to Carlos Hyde for 9 yards. And so there were key plays on that drive where things finally got moving. You just want to be able to cap that drive, end the game right there. Don't even put that pressure on your defense because it's so much different. When you have a good quarterback like Carson Palmer, knowing exactly where the bar is, you have a full 4 downs at your disposal. Mm-hmm. You know you have to get at least a field goal, and a touchdown wins it. That's the advantage of going second. You know exactly what needs to be done to not have to put the the pressure on your defense. Obviously would have been the goal. The 49ers now just have a touchdown in 1 out of their 4 games. That's alarming. 5 of 19 on 3rd down yesterday and 13 penalties for 113 yards. That script has remained similar where it was just last week where you were talking about how getting behind the chains on 1st and 2nd down and setting up 3rd and long instead of 3rd and manageable.
Yeah, and of course the 3rd down number ends up, I didn't break down the yardage yet, but it ends up being 5 of 19, which isn't very good. But I would say the advantage of going first in overtime is what we just went through. You can walk off the field, and that's the frustration, the inability to make that red zone play. And I actually spent a decent amount of time talking to Kyle Shanahan this past week about the very thing that came up in the overtime. It came up in regulation play as well, and how much more difficult it is to run the ball in the red zone. And Kyle talked about it. It's really hard. Now, of course, last year in Atlanta, he had Julio Jones and he had Mohamed Sanu. And, you know, he had red zone receiver weapons that the 49ers right now don't have that kind of – they don't have that huge red zone receiving target that every team wants to have so you can just throw, as we saw in that famous game against the Giants a couple of years ago where they threw 4 fades in a row on, I think, first and goal from the 2 or from the 3-yard line, because that's a play that if you trust your receiver, you think you can score a touchdown. And Kyle was talking about it. It's just numbers. And in the red zone, it is so hard to run the ball. And the 49ers on first and goal in the red zone tried a run play, and it got blown up for a three-yard loss. That's the challenge. And the it's funny because the one what's the one antidote, perhaps, to that that kind of corrects the numbers that Kyle talked about, that's where, if you have a running quarterback, that's why there was a lot of thought that that's where, if Tim Tebow was ever going to make it in the NFL, that was going to be his role in a red zone package, because the running quarterback gives you an extra player on offense to offset the number advantage.
Absolutely. I think also one final thought before we move to the defense is the drops that continue throughout the first four games. You saw Logan Paulson, a huge one downfield. George Kittle had one. Aldrick Robinson, albeit a very tough play downfield, but Brian Hoyer threw a perfect deep ball over his shoulder, a la kind of the Jared Goff to Sammy Watkins throw we saw on Thursday night 2 weeks ago. And so those that, at some point, you just got to be able to help out your quarterback. Brian Hoyer obviously playing far from perfect football, but when he's making some of those deep throws, getting a chance to set up scoring opportunities, got to be able to make those plays. They did it against the Rams, did not do so, yesterday in Arizona.
Yeah, and it's something maybe a little bit to me like the first game against Carolina, where Brian Hoyer threw some terrific balls yesterday. I mean, he dropped right in on Aldrick Robinson that you're asking him to make the Willie Mays catch that we saw in the Rams game by Watkins, and went right through his, you know, basket catch, right through, perfect throw by Hoyer. And so there were those moments. Unfortunately, there were just an awful lot of, again, just very stark misses in the pass game. And another difference between the teams, we saw it a little bit with the 49ers yesterday, and that the check down throws. Hyde did catch five yesterday, but that became the primary weapon for Carson Palmer as the game went along. And the 49ers defense was playing so well, but they and their most targeted receiver was Ellington out of the backfield. And it's a tactic we saw teams use against the 49ers very much 2 years ago. I throw last year out because last year was just horrible defensively. But 2 years ago, you saw teams do that, running backs out there, trying to get them in patterns against 49er coverage. And that's what Palmer and Arizona, if they did one smart thing yesterday, because Larry Fitzgerald was not a factor in the game until the final play, right? The 49ers did a nice job. K'Wan Williams, credit to him. But they did use that check down. They ran Ellington well.
They used the check down because it's a way to mitigate a pass rush. And yesterday, the 49ers' pass rush was as good as it's been all season. 16 total quarterback hits, 6 sacks. That also doesn't count one that was DeForest Buckner's second, where they ultimately accepted the offensive holding call, taking that sack away. They were fantastic. Elvis Dumervil had 2. The 49ers now have 9 sacks on the season by 8 different players. And you expected this. This is the storyline you expected going in without Alex Boone, DJ Humphreys, and Mikey Iupati. This was the game for these guys to show up, Ted, and they did.
Joe, that's exactly right. That again, this was a game where it should have happened. Arizona came into the game dead last in the league in pass pro, most pressures on Palmer, and the 49ers took advantage of that. And it was, you know, Dumervil getting his career 100th and 101st, but Buckner was a presence all game long. And I think, what do you have, 7 quarterback? I'm sorry, 7 tackles, 4 quarterback hits. Solomon Thomas had 4, which was a nice thing to see. That was the one concern in the first 3 games, was that Thomas wasn't getting pressure. He did yesterday. So the defensive front was excellent. They took the run game away from Arizona, which was something else you would have expected. Arizona doesn't have a good run game. So the 49ers defensive front yesterday was terrific. The corners are going to be challenged every game in this defense, and I think they were challenged again yesterday, and Arizona hurt the 49ers with 2 things, the checkdowns we talked about and those comeback routes on the sideline, which, Joe, you know, the Cardinals have speed outside. That's why they move Fitz inside, running them out of the slot, because they have speed outside guys. So you have to respect the go routes. You know that play in Arizona. The corners for the 49ers had to do that. But Palmer has done that in his first 4 games this year. He's worked those comeback routes on the sidelines effectively. He did it again yesterday. I will say one thing. I said this to Tim as we were leaving the booth off the air yesterday. I can't fathom Carson Palmer last 16 games this year. The way he's been hit, the way the 49ers hit him yesterday, and the way he's been hit in the first 4 games at 38, or soon to be, I can't see any way he can last taking that kind of punishment.
Special team standouts yesterday, not a silver lining or a moral victory, but Robbie Gould, 5 for 5, and if you watch those field goals, dead down the pipe every single time. He's been money so far, 11 straight to start the season, 28 straight for him since 2015. And then Bradley Pinion, I think he had a really tough year last year.
Yeah, that's a good call, Joe. Yep.
And he had a fantastic game yesterday, and you say, oh, we're talking about the punter. You know things are going wrong when we're talking about the punter. And I get it, right? I mean, we want to talk about the quarterback and the offense scoring 40 points a game. But in a close game where field position is so vital, he had a punt from his end zone yesterday that went 51 yards, I think it was a net 49, to get on the other side of the field. I thought Bradley Pinion was fantastic yesterday, maybe his best game. 7 punts, a long of 59, 3 inside the 20, a 50.1 yard average, and a 48.9 net. That is a good day for when you need your special teams to step up when your offense is struggling like it was.
No, that's a perfect say, Joe. And the 49ers cover teams were good yesterday. They didn't have to cover kicks, but they covered punts well. As you said, Gold was perfect. He's been perfect. And, you know, save, obviously, for an extra point that Robbie missed in the Rams game that was significant. But I would say this about Pinion, and I couldn't agree more yesterday. That's an unsung hero. You know, in a perfect world, the one thing that arena football has right, no punter. All right? But that's not going to happen in this game. So if you have to punt, you want to minimize the numbers. Well, right now in a stretch where they're not scoring a lot of touchdowns, the punter's going to work. It's a lot like Andy Lee had for years here with the 49ers, what Johnny Hecker is now doing for the Rams. That was the kind of game that Pinion had yesterday. He flipped the field a couple of times significantly. And if you're a fan, 49er fan, you hope that continues.
Absolutely. And on the other side, Trent Taylor averaging 11 yards per punt return. That ranks fourth in the league among players with at least 6 punt returns. Let's turn the page to Indianapolis in week 5 as the road trip continues. Again, the 49ers will not be at Levi's Stadium throughout the entire month of October. Frank Gore, 3 yards away from 7th all-time against behind Eric Dickerson, climbing the charts in terms of the total yards for running back's career. He's been fantastic. It'll be good to see good old Frank, and he'll obviously get that mark on Sunday.
Well, it's going to be an interesting day in Indianapolis Sunday because 99.99% of the fans there are going to be filled with emotion, and the 49ers will have no interest in it at all because the Colts are retiring Peyton Manning's jersey before the game. He's going into their Ring of Honor. He is the greatest athlete, I don't think there's any question, in the history of Indianapolis sports. He will be honored and bestowed in every way possible, and the 49ers won't care. They will care. Those who have been around for a while, now that number's dwindling as well, but those who've been around a while cherish Frank Gore. And Frank Gore is a Hall of Famer in every way, shape, or form. You know, there are two players to me in my 9 years here that stand head and shoulders above the others in their play, in their conduct as a professional, in their performance, and it's Justin Smith and Frank Gore. To me, they are two first ballot Hall of Famers, and I'll always, you know, the obvious thing with Frank that you respect is that he didn't miss a game. I mean, the guy played. We were so spoiled by Frank. He got hurt one time in Arizona, and I forget exactly which season, but it was one of the Mike Singletary years. Frank got hurt. He got his hip torn up on a tackle, and he had to miss about 6-7 games that year. But other than that, there was none of those game in, game out, well, he's questionable this week stuff. Not Frank Gore. He's an Iron Man. And the other thing I'll remember was at the end of the very disappointing first season here in Levi Stadium, and the 49ers season disintegrated in December, and there was turmoil all over that we all know. At the end of the last game here, the 49ers won the game to finish 8-8. Frank Gore did a lap around the field here and high-fived fans in the first row. On a day that was filled with all kinds of puzzlement and disappointment for the 49ers on several levels, Frank Gore and the fans connected here. And I'll never forget that. And I know someday we're going to honor Frank Gore back in the stadium. I've often hoped it would be wearing a 49er uniform one more time. That's not my call. But this guy, he will be a person I seek out on the field before the game Sunday just to go shake his hand and tell him how lousy he looks wearing that Colts uniform.
Awful. Availability, make no mistake, is absolutely a skill.
Yeah.
And nobody better than Frank Gore among all of the other things that he does just so well. Final thoughts on this one. We saw the Colts last night on the plane back from Arizona. They're playing on Sunday Night Football against the Seattle Seahawks. It was close at halftime, ended up being a blowout in the second half. What do you make of that team, and what are the keys to beating Jacoby Brissett in the Indianapolis Colts?
You know, I think the first thing that came to my mind when I saw the schedule was the Colts are facing the dilemma the 49ers face once a year every year, is the game after you play in Seattle. And let's just face it, that's a physical game to play. And the Colts went out there and they banged, from what we could see on the plane flying back, you know, they banged pretty well with the Seahawks in the first half and maybe into the start of the third, and then the game got away from them. But how do the Colts handle the physical rebound after that week in Seattle? It is difficult. Brissett looks pretty good. I mean, I would say the Colts, you know, they traded a good player in Philip Dorsett to get Brissett from the Patriots, but you can see why. And it also gives me an idea, something else, and this is away from the 49ers, although the name was mentioned a lot in connection with the 49ers. When I see Brissett play for three games now, you know what that tells me? Patriots must really like Jimmy Garoppolo, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm saying they kept Garoppolo and traded Brissett. So that tells me Belichick must know something and must see something in Garoppolo in the limited playing time that we've all seen but seen him on the practice field. So, but the Colts are definitely a team that I don't know that rebuild is the right word for them. I don't think they're in the same place as the 49ers. They had expectation. Of course, they expect Andrew Luck to play at some point. It won't be this week. Without Andrew Luck out there, I'm not sure what to expect. They absolutely have a receiver that, like Garcon is for the 49ers, the one guy you really want to make sure you limit, it's T.Y. Hilton on the Colts side. And so the 49ers have to know defensively, this is a guy we can't let him go off.
Absolutely. The defense has played well, kept them in games. Again, the impressive first half yesterday in Seattle. That'll do it for us. Kyle Shanahan will be speaking today at 4 p.m. from the auditorium. So that will be live on Facebook, Periscope, 49ers.com, the team's app. So a number of ways to watch there. You pick your poison. But it'll be interesting to hear from the 49ers head coach now, team 0-4. Heading into Indianapolis in week 5. Ted, as always, I appreciate your thoughts. One final thought from me, again, sending my thoughts and prayers to those affected by the tragedies in Las Vegas. I do believe that the good people in this world vastly outnumber those who wish to do harm to others, but it's unfortunate and scary that we live in a country where someone of that nature can arm himself with 13 automatic weapons and inflict as much damage as he did. Again, I hope our country can move forward. But for today and the weeks and months and years to come, I hope those families find peace and solace, and I pray for them. For Ted Robinson, I'm Joe Fan. We'll see you next week right here on 49ers Live.